Now I'm going to read from Whispers from Eternity, Swami Kriyananda's edited version of Master's book. Let's see. Demand to see God's love in all human love. With the love of all human loves, I have come to love thee, thou God of all loves. Thou art the Father, anxious to protect his children. Thou art the little child lisping love to its parents. Thou art the mother showering infinite kindnesses on all her family. Thou dost flow in the all-surrendering love of the lover for the beloved. Thou art the love of friends for one another. Purify me with the reverence of a servant to his master. Teach me to love thee with all pure loves, for thou art the fountain of love, both earthly and heavenly. Bathe me in the fountain spray of all loves. We are, this is being recorded in May of May 17th of 2020. Those of you who are living through it in real time know that we're in the midst of our 2020 adventure. And those of you who will watch this at some later date will be able to look back on this with a different attitude. I saw a humorous poem called Hindsight is 2020. So that's exactly what we're going to be working with at some point. And I was speaking yesterday with a naturopathic friend of mine, and we have often talked about healing and different ways in which, because she works with a complementary form of medicine to what is mainstream allopathic medicine, she sees it all from many different levels, and also being a dedicated disciple of Master, she has all of his teachings in there. And the way she often thinks about healing is, what particularly interests her is what she calls vibratory healing, which is something that I've come to know and really appreciate through her and for other reasons, that it's based on Master's basic teaching that there are three levels of reality of which the material is the final expression. You have the causal level of reality, which is the idea, the realm of thought, which is an actual universe, the causal universe. Then you have the astral universe where those thoughts are energized. And then when those thoughts are energized, then they finally take material form. The image we always use is this building that I'm standing in now, this beautiful church, which was built about 1950, I believe, by, good heavens, that would make it much too old, but maybe it was about that time. It is that old. 1940 it was built. As a Catholic church, by Catholic workmen who built it exquisitely. They poured their hearts into building it. But before it could manifest in the material world, somebody had to think about building a church, and then they had to energize that with all the plans that were made, and then people had to add more and more energy until it was manifested in the physical world. So we tend to think that things start on the physical, but they actually end on the physical. Because that's the last point where all this energy goes. Energy, vibration, I'm not going to try to define those words very exactly, but they're very similar. So my friend's concept of medicine is that if you change the energy pattern, if you change the vibratory pattern, then you can change the manifestation. This, I don't know what the actual basis of homeopathy is, how they explain it, but it feels a little like that because the physical item that you take doesn't seem like it would have enough power to affect this world, but it does. Bach, flower remedies, even perhaps the gemstones that I wear astrologically, the copper that's in the astrological bangle. You know, all of these things have manifested physical effects, but they're completely out of proportion. I said copper because it's for arthritis, but the bangle itself has gold and silver also. And these are said to work with the planetary forces, but they affect my physical life. I've had this on my body since maybe 1973 or 74. It's not that I've never taken it off, but it's just, I can feel it. I can still feel it. Even wearing it all the time, I feel it. It's a vibratory force that affects my life experience. So the whole idea of more subtle medicine than just, well, even drugs, you take these little tiny pills, but it's more physiologically. They trace that out on the physical plane. But Bach flower remedies, where you get the essence of this flower, or master's essences, which are based on master's definitions of how foods affected us and so on like that, it doesn't work if you're just stacking rocks and then knocking them over. You have to go somewhere else. So the discussion we were having was very interesting, which is, a virus is considered to be an intruder into your world, and we think of the world as a virus as something that infects it. There's all the people who love to express their cleverness by destroying things. Swami described such a personality. In the Bhagavad Gita commentary, he talks about people who tell lies, even lies that are easily dismantled and proven to be false, but they tell lies for the feeling of power it gives them because of the confusion it creates. And people who are truthful, it's just, you think, why would you tell a lie that you could be disproven? But the motivation is completely different, because it does create power to create chaos. We were involved for a period of time in a litigation with an attorney who just, against us, who was working against us, who just lied about everything. But it created so much chaos, and then he could sit back and just kind of enjoy the fact that he was having to run around and respond to what he was doing. So we think of a virus as something, I was starting to say that people have a malevolent intent. They create viruses and they disrupt people's computer systems. And sometimes now, it's become a business. The human ingenuity is just absolutely stunning. You create any reality and somebody's going to try to figure out a way to exert power to have what they want from it. Whether for good or for ill. People will exert the power for good, but people also exert it for ill. So you create viruses that infect your computer and mess up everything that's happening there. So we think of a virus as something that invades. And we have actually now, on this planet, managed to attract or create, however we want to think about it, this virus which can wreak havoc, in the human body. It gets into the human body and it goes berserk in there and causes, just an endless cascading series of things. But the virus, physical virus, is the last piece of the puzzle, because there had to have been an energy pattern that was building. And, some people have argued now that we're all in this seclusion that it's Earth itself. And I heard a very interesting biological talk by a man who has a very impersonal attitude toward nature. I don't remember his name. It was just one of those snippets that come across these days. And he was just talking about how nature is always trying to correct itself. And it's constantly creating new organisms and reorganizing what's there and shifting species and causing things to happen, because it's always trying to find, some sort of balance point. And what is causing disbalance has to be moved aside. And he was talking about, human beings may have to be moved aside because of the disbalance that's being created by everything that we're doing. Well, Master is not quite so, what would I say? Master emphasized for us that the human body is a higher form of creation. I know that's not a popular thought, but Master said emphatically, because there is a highly developed nervous system here that has the capacity to live in the material world and perceive infinity. And so therefore, we work through lower forms of life as a jiva, as an individual soul. We work through lower forms of life until we have earned by the expansion of our consciousness, a human body which has capabilities that animal bodies don't have. The way Swamiji described it in a piece of his writing, which was so perfect, we incarnate in the body that has the capability of manifesting whatever consciousness we have developed. And when I say we, I'm speaking of the jiva from the beginning of its cycle. Yogananda said he remembered back to the point of being a diamond. He remembered being a diamond and then coming all the way up to self-realization. And a diamond has a certain consciousness, but you can see that its options are kind of limited. But nonetheless, there it is. I was recently told a story about when Swamiji was getting a diamond for the Navratna he wears, which is a 9-jewel bangle, one precious stone for each of the planets. It's a very powerful thing to wear. And he was getting a better diamond for that. And someone offered him a diamond that they thought it might be suitable. And he wanted them to take it out of the room right away, because he said the soul of that diamond was not a positive soul. You know, and I don't understand how a jiva could become negative that early. But in other words, somehow that crystal had gathered negative energy, and there are traditions of stones being cursed, that it's beautiful, but it has a curse on it. These are all things that are fascinating to contemplate, but we come up through every body because we learn as we become the best possible lizard we can be, and we have more in us to express, and the lizard body just doesn't do it. So maybe we get to be a rodent the next time. Then we get to be bigger and bigger rodents. And I mean, I don't know what the progression is. Master said that monkeys, dogs, and horses are the most advanced animals. I always get emails from cat lovers. I'm sorry, these are not my words. These are Master's words, and I'm just repeating what he said. But we get the body that has the capacity, that has the capability of expressing the highest level of consciousness that we have developed. So once we have used up all of the potential of being an animal, then we get to be in a human body. I was thinking recently about animals, service dogs, dogs that are trained to help autistic people or handicapped people or can sniff out even diseases. But I was thinking, what a relief it must be for a dog to finally have something useful to do. I mean, can you imagine a dog's life just going out for a walk and being all excited all the time about the same walk, and then going home and going to sleep and then going out for a walk again? I mean, finally to have meaningful work, you know, to be able to help somebody, because they're all the same. I mean, everything is just the same. It's just on a spectrum. And the dog is getting ready to be able to do more. And so there must be a period of time of frustration. And then you get drawn into one of these highly intelligent dogs that gets to have a much more interesting life. So the human body is not meant to be thrown away, because we've earned it, and it has capabilities. It has divine capabilities, and therefore must be protected. It needs to be protected. So the virus and the human body are not equal, even though the biologist may sort of think they're equal. From the point of view of self-realization, they're not equal. But at the same point, and let me just come back now to where I was going with all this, because this actually is about Martha and Mary. This is about the fact that what we do in the manifested world gains importance because of what we're doing with our consciousness. And what's happening right now, Swamiji has been talking about cataclysmic events on this planet, because Master talked about cataclysmic events on this planet, and he said they would happen. Master just said them not with indifference, because Master was not at all indifferent to human suffering. He has tremendous tender heart, and he suffers with us. In one of his beautiful poems, he talks about weeping himself. He talks about being beyond this world, but he will still weep when we suffer. He said, "Weep through my eyes and perchance through yours," that he too will just be feeling what we're feeling. So he's not indifferent to it. But at the same time, the masters want us to be well in the best possible way. And physical health is a very temporary kind of wellness. The wellness that they want for us is the infinite wellness of the Spirit. And Master said, and Swami put it so bluntly, he said, the root cause of all of these difficulties that we're going to face is greed. Just a very simple word, greed. You know, the word greed means wanting to have more than you need, wanting to have more than is appropriate for you to have, wanting to indulge in ways that are not nurturing to the Spirit. And, you know, the greed is, it's a very complicated word. It's not just money. I mean, money is the way people tend to think about it. But what we're watching in our world right now is just a desire to have, to hold, to make the world a certain way, to mold it to what we want. Now, this is a very sensitive balance, because the desire to create beauty, the desire to serve others, it's not as if we're not meant to be ambitious. The divine intends for us to be very, very busy, just as God is busy. We need to emulate the Creator. We need to become as the Creator. So we want to have magnificent aspirations, but it needs to be in service and devotion to God and to create beautiful realities in this world. Swamiji said something that's so touching to me. He said one of the reasons that Ananda worked so harmoniously, and at that time there was just one small community, but now we have thousands of people around the world, and there is this notable harmonious factor. He said, we've all lived together in the astral world. We've created beautiful, harmonious communities in the astral world. So we know what it feels like. We come down into this world and we try to recreate whatever astral beauty we remember, or astral ugliness. You just, sometimes people, you can see they lived in a very dark astral world. The houses they live in are dark. They keep the curtains closed. They make dark furniture. They wear dark clothes. And other people build light-filled spaces with beautiful colors in them. And we're trying to recreate the vibration that feels the best to us, that feels the most natural to us. Because the vibration is where things, the material world manifests certain vibrations. And what has crept into our society is this vibration of more and more and more for me, for me, for me. And it's not just one country, it's sort of the whole attitude of the world. It's partly because Dwapara Yuga has made so much more possible. So we can order things from foreign countries, and manufacturing is way increased and more efficient. So, you know, we can buy shoes and we can get handbags and we can get our hair done in really fancy ways and we can change the color of it and we can travel and we can go more and more extravagant places. And it's not that any of that is inherently bad. It's just that when the Spirit begins to think all the time about its outward realities, the vibration gets very, very confused. And Mother Earth becomes something to exploit rather than to attune to and to express. And even a friend of mine who worked very much in the hospice movement with dying people, he put out this fact, which I believe I've been told is true, is that the entire medical expense crisis is, he said, and these are the words, I'm just going to say it, I believe it's true, 70% of every dollar on medicine is spent in the last 6 months of life to increase a person's life by an average of 21 days. And that was his statistic that he brought forward. And then he used the phrase life greed, which is why I remembered it. This just sort of inability to harmonize with that which is natural, and instead always trying to get more. And it creates this constant change. So this weird virus has come now. And in the process of trying to protect human life, we're in great danger of wrecking our economy globally. I mean, I have no answers for any of this, and I'm not interested in politics. I'm not interested in conspiracies. I just stand back and think, wow, I wonder what this means. What does this mean on the highest level of what we're really supposed to do? And what is the real virus? You know, the real virus is the infection that's in our consciousness. And I don't mean Kriya Yogis, although all of us can work with this. Just this thought that we're always looking outside ourselves, and we're always trying to impose our will, and we're always thinking about ourselves. You know, so this whole story of the Martha and Mary story is actually, it's right in the middle of it. God knows it wasn't written for, you know, for a pandemic in the year 2020. But this is the constant reality that we're always working with, which is there's this outward moving energy in us. And when that outward moving energy just gets out of control, so that we're no longer acting from any intuition, we're just acting from one stimulation to another stimulation to another. I recall reading in this column in the newspaper once, and it was talking about speed, not, I guess methamphetamine used to be called speed. I'm not sure that word is still used, but he was just talking literally about physical speed. He was talking about the thrill of physical speed. And the problem is, you start getting used to a certain speed, and it's not thrilling anymore. So you have to push it a little farther for it to be thrilling, and you have to push it a little bit farther for it to be thrilling. We get used to a certain stimulation, whether it's food or the speed of the images on the screen, whatever screen we're watching, or the loudness of the movie, or the shock of the curse words and the vulgarity. We just get comfortable with a certain level of vulgarity. So to get the same shock, we have to be even more vulgar. So I'm going to draw this back to Martha and Mary, although vulgarity Martha and Mary is a kind of an odd trio, which of one of these is different than the other two. But what you're working with, on one hand, is the outward moving energy, which is what Martha represents. What Mary represents is inner communion. And what is the point of the outward moving energy? See, that's what we also have to understand. Martha's feeding Jesus. I mean, I think, you know, somebody has to make the soup. I've often been the cook in the kitchen when Swami Kriyananda would come to visit our community, most of the time it would be usually 10 or 15 people that would just move around with him, either partly from this community or they would come from other communities, and they would stay in our house, and I was often the cook. And so when everybody else was doing something else, I had to be thinking about the next meal, which I love. This is not a complaint. But when I read the life of Jesus, all those people are there to, you know, to see Lazarus be resurrected from the tomb. And after he was resurrected, somebody had to make lunch. It just had to be done. And that's why in the previous week, when this was also about the Martha Mary story, Martha complains that Mary's not helping. Swami says very astutely, the Bible doesn't say whether Jesus asked Mary to help Martha, because he could have. He could have said, your sister needs help. You know, she's doing too much. It's time for you to get up. But the real point is what he's saying today. Without inner communion, it all becomes, well, you might even say it becomes a form of greed. We're just trying to get for ourselves, where the real entire and only purpose of our incarnation is to be aware at all times that I am in the presence of God. I am a manifestation of the Spirit. That there is nothing in me that is separate from the divine. But when we get so involved in what we're doing the next, that's what Jesus was saying to Martha. You're care-filled. It says careful in the Bible, and sometimes you think, what's wrong with being careful? It's care-filled is what he means. You're becoming anxious. And speaking of May of 2020, people are becoming anxious. And anxious for really good reasons, meaning these are not groundless fears that we have right now. We're worried about how we're going to keep going. And there's only one answer to it. The virus is in our consciousness. The virus is that we have lost our connection to God. And we're feeling, not surprisingly, empty and bereft. Where does greed come from? Greed comes from because it's never enough. You know, how much profit can I make on this? How much, you know, power can I have over you? How many things can I have in my closet? Whatever it might be, it's never enough. Where does that come from? When we're content within ourselves, it doesn't cross our mind to do it. Anyone who goes backpacking for a couple of weeks realizes, you know, what is my house filled with? You know, what is all that stuff? When you sometimes you move and you put your stuff in a storage locker and 2 years later you go back and get it and you think, what is it? What is all that stuff? Because when we feel communion with God, we realize, oh yeah, that's what I was looking for. This is it. And whenever we lose that, we begin to behave badly because nothing will fill us. It's very simple. Nothing will. That's all. You can just do as much as you want. You'll always be care-filled and not filled with contentment. In the Whispers reading that I read today, Master goes through all the wonderful ways that we express the divine in this world, father, mother, friend, beloved. And Master glorifies each one of those, the protective energy of the father, the ever-kind energy of the mother, the lisping innocence of the child, the reverent devotion of the servant, the complete surrender to the beloved. That's what we're looking for. We want both to receive and to be the channel for that. And, you know, that's the desire that we should be moving with. And whether we're cooking lunch or trading stocks or raising our children or farming or just sitting home waiting for life to start again, communion, being in the presence of, then everything else will follow. When the vibration is right, the manifestation is perfect. And we can tell that the vibration is off because the manifestation is off. And we back up and we back up until we find our true place of rest. And from that, everything that needs to happen will express itself in the most beautiful way. And without that, we will always be worried and care-filled about everything. You know, Master and God and Guru, Divine Mother, they're watching over us with all the perfect love that we strive for in this world. It's always being showered upon us by the divine if we would receive it. Bless you.
May joy fill our days. Oh, Master, may thy wisdom guide our ways. The time has come for us to see that there's but one reality upon the earth and high above. The truth that all was made from love. A love that calls to us to fly above the hills, above the sky, above the storms, above the pain. A land where peace and laughter reign. Master, may thy joy fill our days. Oh, Master, May thy wisdom guide our ways. Guide all our hopes and all our dreams, past every glow that only seems, into the light, the inner sun, into the truth that we're all one. Help us to find in every hour, in every thought, in every flower, a joy that spans eternity, the truth that makes us ever free. Oh, Master, may thy joy fill our days. Oh, Master, may thy wisdom guide our ways. Oh, Master, may thy joy fill our days. Oh, Master, may thy wisdom guide our ways.